The content of the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Present your case to our experts by calling in between 12:30 and 1 on Sundays. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now your host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Good Sunday and welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. At this time, we would like to take a moment and to extend our thoughts and prayers to John Travolta and Kelly Preston over the tragic loss of their son, Jet, reportedly died after a seizure disorder. For those of you who are battling your own challenges with epilepsy and seizure disorders, we have booked a radio healthcare clinic on Sunday, February 8th. We'll be joined by Dr. William Tatum, neurologist and seizure and epilepsy expert. That's February 8th. Listen and call in with your questions. Now, as you know, this radio healthcare clinic is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, whose mission is to create an interactive health safety net with immediate impact to save lives and protect families. We make you a lay medical expert on your medical problems using interactive, dynamic education programs. And this includes this radio program. Hundreds of you are actually listening right now. We cover different medical topics each week with a different guest expert. Additionally, we have an annual symposium. The fourth annual Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium is scheduled this year for March 21st, 2009. It is free, absolutely free. It's going to be held at the Tampa Convention Center. We now are expecting over 2,000 women to join us there, so please register now. The registration is open on the website. That's focusonfemales.com. On the homepage, you'll see a registration tab. If you go to it, you can register and reserve your space, your seat, as seating is limited. Today, the topic we'll be covering is what's causing my chest pain. And we have with us expert cardiologist, Dr. Eric Harrison. Dr. Eric Harrison is the medical director of cardiology at IASIS Memorial Hospital of Tampa. He is very experienced in all aspects of cardiology, and with the help of his colleagues, started one of the first 5 paramedic services in the country. Dr. Harrison has done over 15,000 heart catheterizations and started echocardiography at Tampa General Hospital with the help of Dr. Feigenbaum. He has been a transplant cardiologist and has been very active in nuclear cardiology. Dr. Harrison is the author of numerous medical articles and has contributed chapters to several books. He is a graduate of Kentucky Medical College and received his postgraduate training at the University of South Florida. Dr. Harrison's specialty is advanced cardiac imaging, that is, coronary CTA, cardiac PET and CT, and cardiac MRI. Dr. Harrison is one of the founding physician faculty of the University of South Florida Medical School. And Eric, it's nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Steve. Steve, before we get started, I'd like to say a few things about women and heart disease, and want us to give a quick plug to the American Heart Association Go Red for Women program, which is an outstanding program that during the Heart Month, which happens to be the Valentine's Day month, which you can't forget, during Heart Month, there will be community luncheons, discussions. Last year, there was something at the Marriott Tampa Waterside Hotel where they have the 12th Annual Women's Health Seminar Luncheon. And so when you think of women and heart disease, you think of the American Heart Association and the month of February as being Go Red. So we hope that you'll be supportive of that.
Very good. Very good. Thanks for raising that and bringing it to the attention of our listeners. Now, let's talk about women and heart disease. And since the topic is what's causing my chest pain, let's begin with the basic question of are women's symptoms of heart disease or acute heart disease different than men, and why?
Well, that's a good question, because the question is wrong to start with. What's causing my chest pain shows a bias already. And in fact, the problem has been applying the male template to women and thinking that that's the way to predict heart problems with women. And actually, we have found, and the Heart Association has found, many others have found, that women present with symptoms that are totally different from those that are men. And so for a while, that was called atypical chest pain. But again, that shows a bias in the language itself, in the semantics, because atypical means that there is atypical. And typical turns out to be the male pattern, and the male pattern is unacceptable to apply in a cookie-cutter fashion to females.
Eric, let's do this. Let's start with what the traditional thinking is, or the traditional symptoms of a heart attack, and then discuss how a woman's symptoms might differ, if you would.
Yeah, women's typical for a male, the male pattern, is exertional chest discomfort, frequently radiating down the arm, numbness of the arm, numbness of the neck, shoulder, brought on by exertion, relieved by rest, associated with other symptoms such as shortness of breath, diaphoresis, which means sweating, nausea, vomiting, and then to an extreme, if it's to an extreme and lasts longer than 20 minutes, then it's considered a prodrome of a heart attack. There's angina, which is pain that goes away with rest, and then there's a heart attack where the pain's not going away at all. So in males, the male pattern basically is a typical pattern like that that probably runs in the 85% range of males with cardiac angina or with cardiac events.
And does it matter, as you mentioned, pain radiating to the arm, does it matter which arm? Traditionally, people, I remember, of course, in medical schools, the left arm. If it radiates to the right arm, does it indicate something different, or could it still be cardiac in origin?
And that's really funny, because we're so attached to the description by Dr. Levine in the 30s. We became very attached to that description. There's a sign called Levine's sign where he clenches his fist above his chest and says, "I'm having chest pain." And so the Levine description, and also a description by Sir William Osler of this kind of pattern, has ingrained itself in everyone's thoughts and minds and in the literature, to the point during the 30s and 40s and 50s that we now recognize that it's not true. And so there are some people, men, that have right arm pattern angina and right arm pattern heart attacks. And it's really amazing how we'll miss that. And I know a gentleman who had right arm pattern discomfort, who wound up basically going to the emergency room finally and getting taken care of, and then had a bare metal stent put in, and about 3 months later developed restenosis of that stent and re-presented to a cardiology group practice with right arm pain, and was sent to get an MRI to look for arthritis of the shoulder. And it wasn't recognized that that was his particular pattern, because the doctor who saw him at this time was a different member of the group practice. And so identifying that pattern is very important, to put it on the front of the chart and say, this gentleman has a pattern of shortness of breath, or this lady's right. pattern is nausea and vomiting, or this patient's pattern is right arm pain.
Yes, communication is very important. Also speak to continuity of care, and these are very important issues. All right, so tell us then how symptoms may differ for women.
Well, there's a symptom complex that can occur that's so highly variable that you have to list a laundry list: nausea, vomiting, back pain, sweating, fast heart rate, slow heart rate, elevated blood pressure, decreased blood pressure, pain in the stomach, a long list of symptoms that seem shortness of breath, weakness, unusual fatigue, cold sweats, dizziness, anxiety.
With such a laundry list, how does a woman know when to go to the emergency room or when to call 911?
Women are amazing. They continue to be a mystery to me. And the fact is that they know their own bodies so much better than we do as guys. And so they recognize that there's something wrong. And usually they have been told, oh, Louise, that's okay. You know, you're just having a little anxiety. You're just upset because of the stress and so on and so forth. But they need to not be condescended to and not let the symptoms be played down, but to seek medical help when they see that they have unusual fatigue, unusual shortness of breath, anxiety, weakness, cold sweats.
Do they typically have like a sense of impending doom?
No, there's nothing typical.
Mm-hmm.
And so that may or may not occur. And so one of the things that I looked at in our emergency room was...
And we're gonna come right back to some of Dr. Harrison's work when we discuss more of chest pain is focusing on women. We'll be right back on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
If you have lost between 10 to 50% of your retirement account, this is one commercial your broker does not want you to hear. There are 50 million people who have invested over $13 trillion in our products. So what are you waiting for? A Wall Street miracle? Good luck. These are the same people that got you into this mess. Hi, my name is Bill Wilson with the John Advisory Team here in Tampa. Our clients have not lost one dime in the recent stock market collapse. As a matter of fact, our clients that made between 10 to 25% 2 years ago still have all those gains. How? We lock them in and can do the same for you. We will even help you recover some of your current losses with a 10% cash bonus. $200,000 becomes $220,000, $500,000 becomes $550,000. With nearly $7 trillion in stock market value wiped out last year, why are you gambling with what you have left? If you want to sleep at night, reduce stress, have a plan that actually works, call 866-515-6669 for a free retirement DVD entitled Retain Your Gains. Call 866-515-6669. That's 866-515-6669.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
Are you one of the many folks who suffer from dry eye? Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but dry eye is something you'll have to live with or nothing can be done for you? Well, don't stand for that answer anymore just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems. Go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you'll be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. The Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, 3001 Swan Avenue in Tampa. Find them online at drmaskin.com. Haven't you waited long enough?
Lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
And welcome back on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're talking about chest pain, heart disease with cardiologist Eric Harrison. And quoting here from the Wall Street Journal, this is November 25th of 08. Heart disease is the number one killer of both sexes, claiming more lives each year than all cancers combined. More women than men have died from heart disease in the United States every year since 1984, and they are twice as likely as men to die after a heart attack, according to the National Coalition for Women with Heart Disease. And Dr. Harrison is a leader in evaluation of heart function. And so I'd like to ask Eric to comment on some of the programs that you have initiated and some of the work that you've done.
Let me say something about the statistics you gave. And more women than men die. And basically there has been a steady decline in mortality over the last few years. The women present more frequently with angina. Men present with sudden death syndrome, and acute MIs. The question always becomes, what can you do to prevent these things? We are having now equal number of women and men with angina. That makes it, now that we recognize angina in women better than we did in the past, we can do more extensive studies. You'll find that in the past, most of the research has been done with males rather than with females. So we've taken a look at some things, looking in the busy emergency room, trying to find out what happens when a man presents to the emergency room and what happens when a woman presents to the emergency room. When a man presents to the emergency room, what I see is rapid triage and treatment. And so since there's less ambiguous symptoms, the male template is applied and aspirin is given, EKG is done rapidly, all these things are being tracked by CMS and in all emergency rooms now as required by Medicare. Some pathway will be determined for the patient in terms of treatment. And other things will be done that will aggressively treat the patient. He may wind up in a chest pain center in the emergency room, may be admitted to the hospital, may have a STEMI, which is an ST segment elevation MI, which tells you what's on the EKG and may go in directly to the cath lab for angioplasty and stenting.
Okay, let me interrupt you here. So we're going to come back to this particular comparison. As Dr. Harrison laid out the typical course for a gentleman, a man in the emergency room. We have a caller, Beth, on the line. And Beth, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hi.
And hello, and you have a question for Dr. Harrison.
Yes, I actually have two. My first one is I'm in my mid-40s, and I'm in perimenopause right now, and I'm wondering if is it safe for me to consider hormone replacement therapy, and if not, what are the risks with that heart-related?
And did you say, are you having any symptoms of menopause at this time?
Yes.
And those are?
Hot flashes and irregular, no cycles.
Okay.
For quite a while.
Eric, what do you think?
Well, I can't address you directly, Beth, because that would be diagnosing and treating over the radio. But I can talk in...
Generally speaking.
Generally speaking, correct. And so I would want to know if you have other risk factors for heart disease, such as diabetes, hypertension, elevated cholesterol, family history of heart disease. I don't think you're a cigarette smoker. I don't think you'd be listening to a health program if you were. Okay, we can always get the attention of those people who are more interested in their health, and the ones who aren't are really hard to get their attention. So those things would be important, and then...
Do you have any of those risk factors, Beth?
No, I do not.
Okay.
Okay, and I didn't think you would either, calling into this program.
I do have asthma. That would be it.
Okay, good. So, not good, but thank you for the information. Then there has been a very controversial area about hormone replacement therapy in women and what it means in terms of risk for cardiovascular disease has changed from year to year as the medical opinions have changed and they've gone 180 degrees and then back another 180 degrees. And so you can see we don't know everything about medicine. And so the bottom line at this time is if there's a reason for you to have hormone replacement therapy and a valid reason, that continuing that from perimenopause into menopause and continuing thereafter is a reasonable thing to do. However, if you go into menopause and you don't receive hormonal replacement therapy, implementing that later on is not a good thing to do and increases the risk of having a cardiovascular event.
I see.
So that's the most generalized answer that I can give to that question.
So one conclusion we can say is that there's still work to be done to sort these issues out. Would you agree with that?
And the other conclusion is certainly consult your doctor and also go online and do a little mini search on what the latest thoughts are.
Okay.
And your other question, Beth?
My other question is about 6 months ago I was in another city and I noticed that there was this vendor at a mall and she had an article I was reading about sleep disorders related to heart problems. Can you touch on that? And if so, what kind of sleep problems cause what kind of heart problems, I guess?
And sleep apnea
is
associated with heart disease in men and women. It's associated with hypertension as well. And so there are a lot of heart things happen, elevation of the pressure, slowing of the heart rate, when you stop breathing for a while and become very hypoxic. And those lead to very significant heart disease problems.
Hypoxic, of course, meaning low oxygen levels in your blood.
Exactly. And so sleep apnea is treated most of the time either with a CPAP, which is an external device that you can use to keep your airway open while you sleep, and you put that on your head, or it's treated with surgical solutions or little appliances. And so treating the sleep apnea, seeing a sleep physician is very important in evaluating that condition. And if you or anyone else on the our listeners notice that your spouse quits breathing and you won't hear anything for a while and you hear him snore and then there's a cessation of snoring, be concerned about that because that has grave medical consequences if it's recurrent.
Can it cause congestive heart failure?
Yes, it can cause congestive heart failure, hypertension, sudden death.
Wow.
Can it cause an irregular heartbeat, Eric?
Arrhythmias, ventricular, atrial.
Okay.
arrhythmias. Atrial fibrillation is very common.
Beth, stay on the phone. We'll come back to this when we return on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
With SRN News, I'm Michael Harrington in Washington. Israeli troops continue to advance in the Gaza Strip while encountering fierce resistance from Hamas fighters. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert tells his cabinet today the country is nearing its goals. President-elect Barack Obama says he is unhappy with what he calls a lack of oversight in the $350 billion already spent by the government to bail out the financial system. On ABC TV's This Week program, Mr. Obama calls for tighter controls on how the remaining funds are spent. Vice President Dick Cheney offering some advice to his successor, Joe Biden. Make sure you know what the president wants you to do. How influential is the vice president? Cheney tells CNN that depends entirely on the president. And President Bush is warning the Republican Party it must not become, quote, anti-immigrant, as it regroups from defeat and retools for leadership, says that'll cost him in the future. More details at SRNnews.com.
Just 39 words will inaugurate a new president and a new era.
I, Franklin Delano Roosevelt,
do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States
and will, to the best of my ability,
preserve, protect, and defend
the Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
Join us for full coverage of the inauguration of the 44th President, Barack Obama, Tuesday, January 20th, on Talk Radio 860, WGUL.
Kim Commando here with three really good reasons why you can't miss my show this weekend. Number one, make money online. You can do it. I know the secrets. Two, gear. Buying the best using what you have. Number three, me. I am the digital goddess. No, please don't bow. It gets embarrassing for us both. Just meet me right here this weekend.
Kim Commando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 18 years and is board certified, fellowship trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and the American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2008 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com. And if you've not found relief for your painful red, dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives. Lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Welcome back once again on Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're talking about chest pain, heart disease in women. With Dr. Eric Harrison, cardiologist, and on the line is Beth. Beth, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, and you brought up the relationship between sleep apnea and heart disease, and Eric, I have a question for you. So if a patient, let's say a patient had a cardiac arrest and wound up needing a defibrillator and pacemaker implanted, and at that point in time did not necessarily, it wasn't discovered, not recognized that the patient also had, say, sleep apnea, and yet the patient had congestive heart failure as well, can that patient go on, even though they've had the defibrillator and pacemaker implanted, could that patient go on and still have difficulties in the setting of untreated or unrecognized sleep apnea?
Most patients with congestive heart failure who have low ejection fractions now receive bi-V pacers and automatic defibrillators. That in mind, then we're going to have less people who have deaths that are due to arrhythmias, such as ventricular fibrillation or ventricular tachycardia. That's arrhythmias from the lower chambers or high-grade heart block with heart failure in terms of its own activation with the pacer taking over. But they will continue to have congestive heart failure unless adequately treated, and even those adequately treated can have end-stage congestive heart failure and die from congestive heart failure and hypoxemia from that.
So having received the defibrillator pacemaker is not protective, and that if there are other comorbid or other conditions that must be identified and treated.
Yeah, that's it's a Pollyanna to think that those devices are going to cure them. We do know that females who have heart failure and who have what's called ischemic cardiomyopathy, where they don't get enough oxygen because of blocked arteries, those patients benefit from the intracardiac defibrillators. There's no proof that that in females that if they don't have the blocked arteries but have a cardiomyopathy where their heart basically doesn't squeeze well, but they don't have blocked arteries, there's no proof that the automatic defibrillator will benefit that particular group. Mm-hmm. Women with heart failures are totally different from men with heart failure. Women develop heart failure in older age. They have better squeeze of their heart, where their heart may squeeze normally, and the heart failure that they have may be due to failure of the heart to relax. That's called diastolic dysfunction.
Like a spasm of the heart?
No, the heart is like a hand in a glove, and the heart can't relax because the muscle became stiff and doesn't have compliance or elasticity. And so the volume of blood that it needs to fill won't be able to get in there because of the resistance to distension for that particular volume. And so that may result in fluid being in the chest and having what's called congestive heart failure or pulmonary edema. Mm. Women basically are more likely than men to have hypertension and diabetes as underlying risk factors for heart failure. The morbidity with heart failure in women is significant, but the prognosis is better than in men. Women will survive longer. And so...
Is it recognized why the survival rate is higher in women than men?
It may have to do with that they are treated more aggressively with their congestive heart failure at some time after it's recognized. They seem to be sicker. They have worse quality of life, more dyspnea, but it remains pretty unclear on why they live longer than men with heart failure. That you know that it's a better life expectancy expected for women, so it may be because there's a better life expectancy to start with that you would expect in women.
How about compliance?
And women do seem to be a little more organized in some cases.
Very good. Beth, does that answer some of your questions?
Yes, it does.
Do you have any other follow-up questions?
That's it.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for calling in, and hope you're enjoying our radio program.
I am. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Let's see. On the line now is Hazel from St. Pete. Hazel, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare program.
Thank you.
Do you have a question for Dr. Harrison?
Yes, I do. I have a history of heart problems in my family, but I'm more worried about my grandchildren who participate in sports. And it seems that every year young people are dying during play or practice are running. It does seem that it's usually young men, but I was wondering if young women are also subject to this, and if so, is there any test that you might have to be able to identify kids that might be open to this sort of thing happening to them?
Well, Hazel, that's a great question, and even, you know, we can think back the last 10, 20, 30 years or so, even professional athletes can have these sudden death episodes, and you'd think that these elite athletes are carefully screened looking for risk factors like that or to cause sudden death. Eric, what do you think about Hazel's question?
Hazel, that's a good question, and what's very high profile is when a young person has sudden cardiac death that goes throughout the community and reverberates. And you don't hear about females having that as often because it's not that females don't have heart disease and don't have the underlying five major causes of sudden death in young people. But those causes are usually something called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, which is an inherited disease where there's thickening of the heart muscle in one particular area. And there's something called arrhythmogenic right ventricular dysplasia, where there's a congenital problem with the right ventricle. And there's coronary anomalies, where the origin of a coronary comes off from the wrong place and runs a course between the pulmonary artery and the aorta. And then there's myocarditis. And then, unfortunately, in the top five is a new one that hadn't been there before in the last 30 years, which is cocaine, and cocaine-induced coronary spasm. And so those are kind of the things that happen, and they happen to females as well as males. And recognizing the congenital anomalies can be very, very difficult. And it's recommended that you have a high index of suspicion as a family practitioner, coach, cardiologist. A lot of the playing fields now have automatic defibrillators in place for trying to rescue someone. In the preventive atmosphere, there may be some prodromal symptoms in maybe a third of people who have sudden cardiac death. And in those, they may be some passing out or weakness or dizziness or feeling like you're going to pass out or having chest pain during the exertional period. It's been such that men have always exerted more than females in athletics, but I think we're starting to get some equality there as well. So we may have a higher population of women at risk. And there are ways of sorting these out with echocardiograms, with MRI. And in females, I prefer, if I'm looking for the coronary arteries coming off the wrong places, I prefer the MR because there's no radiation exposure, and the echo because there's no radiation exposure.
So do you think that there is a need for those that enter competitive sports at some level to have some of these tests done as a screening measure?
That becomes difficult. Now, in Italy, the highest cause of sudden death in young athletes is arrhythmogenic right ventricular dysplasia, where the right ventricle sort of gets very, very thin and doesn't squeeze well and causes arrhythmias. That's easily detected with echocardiography. And so in that country, they have done mass screening of everyone with echocardiograms, and they have actually decreased significantly the incidence of sudden death in athletes. In this country, probably most common is idiopathic hypertrophic subaortic stenosis, and that's a thickening of the heart muscle. EKGs can be screened for a thickening of the heart muscle, and certainly there's a family history that can be screened about symptoms and sudden death in the family. But beyond that, just doing screening tests like EKGs on everyone and echoes on everyone will pick up false positives that may have been destined for careers in athletics and maybe sidetracked then because they're a false positive and they have a thick heart because they're an athlete, rather than because they have a congenital heart problem. And
Do you see the technology reaching a point where to diminish the level of false positives so that these lives can be saved?
Yeah, not at this point, but I think there's certainly hints that we maybe have come up with a cheap, easy screening test that will tell us something about metabolism of the heart and tell us something that's going on. And there's some things on the horizon that may be easy and cheap that may be able to do that.
In the meantime, do you see dehydration playing any role at all in when these athletes exert themselves to such a high level?
Well, dehydration is a very common cause, and I was on the Bayshore watching the Gasparilla run, and this gentleman came down the road and was kind of circling the drain a little bit and got a hold of a telephone pole and slipped on down to the ground, and we called EMS and immediately got over to him and took him inside the ambulance, and we were starting an IV to get him rehydrated. He was very gray looking, and he said, oh, I hope you can do a good job on the IV, because it took him three sticks in Boston to be able to get my IV. And so this is a gentleman who's had repetitive episodes of dehydration and doesn't know how to stay hydrated during athletic events or how to stay away from athletic events that are really hot.
Mm.
And so dehydration is can be a common cause. And I had a patient that was a center at a major college and would become dehydrated and feel like he's going to pass out in the field. And we just found that he just needs to have a lot more Gatorade than everybody else.
Hazel, does that help you at all?
Well, yes, very interesting, all sorts of aspects. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Hazel.
Thank you, Hazel. And also on the line is Beth Ann calling from Brandon. Beth Ann, are you, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Program.
Thank you very much.
And you have a question about cardiac disease and heart disease and chest pain for Dr. Harrison.
Yes. I have a friend who's about 45 years old, and he was having chest pains for maybe about a week and a half. And then I guess it got to the point where he felt that there was something more to it than just chest pain. So he went to the emergency room, and they ended up having to have emergency surgery, and they put a stent in one of his valves, I guess. And I was wondering, when do you know that, you know, it's not gas, it's not, you know, something minor? Because he could have waited too long, and it could have been disastrous for him and his family.
So he went to the emergency room, and they diagnosed that the pain was from his heart?
Yes, that he was actually having a heart attack. He had some blockage, and they put a stent in
an artery, probably.
Right.
Okay, and your question is?
Well, when is the pain? Because he went a week and a half with this pain in his chest. And when do you know that it's not something that's just minor? When is it?
Very good question. Eric?
It's certainly easier with males because of the template and typical patterns that they have. And so something that is persistent and won't go away is important. Something that is severe, that's not musculoskeletal, that's not related to how you move your arm or how you move your shoulder, something that comes on recurrently with exertion and is readily relieved by rest that lasts 5 or 10 minutes is more typical in males. In females, as we said, they have different warning signs for heart disease than men do, and it's basically unusual fatigue, sleep disturbances, shortness of breath, indigestion, anxiety, feeling that you're not quite right, cold sweats, dizziness. And then we have a triage system for evaluating that.
And we're going to come right back and talk about that triage system. Beth Ann, feel free to stay on the line. We'll be right back on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Family Minute with Mark Merrill is brought to you by the Law Offices of Joe Pippin.
How do you parent adult children? I'm Mark Merrill with today's Family Minute. A friend of mine is almost 40 years old, but her mom is still telling her what to do. Things like, you need to water those plants, your skin looks dry, why don't you try some moisturizer, and your house would look better if you took down those shutters. As your kids grow into adults, your role needs to change too. Unless it's a life or death situation, only give your advice when asked. Try to be a listener and encourager instead of a criticizer. Show them you love them by letting them be the adults you raised them to be. Remember, your family first.
To have the Family Minute delivered every weekday to your email inbox, sign up at myfamilyminute.com.
Family Minute, brought to you by the Law Offices of Joe Pippin. Join us every Saturday morning for Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law.
This radio healthcare program is being brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 4th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida, 33679-2702.
Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Okay, we're back on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. I'm Steve Maskin. We're talking about cardiac pain, heart pain, with Dr. Eric Harrison. And Eric and I were talking on the break about the percentage of patients, men versus women, who have chest pain as a presenting symptom of heart attack. And whereas 80 to 90% or more of men have chest pain, evidently only about 50% of women may present or have symptoms of chest pain when they're having a heart attack.
So basically, Steve, we've identified in the emergency room a group of symptoms for the triage nurse that are shortness of breath, nausea and vomiting, fainting, chest pain, arm pain, back pain, shoulder pain, jaw pain, chest discomfort, low blood pressure, high blood pressure, fast heart rate, slow heart rate, profound sweating. And basically, if someone presents with these symptoms, then we feel that if they're in the right age group, which would be above the age of, say, 30, that in females, that we should consider one computer keystroke to be able to get two EKGs 90 minutes apart, two blood tests for cardiac markers 90 minutes apart. The blood test is called a troponin I. A B-type natriuretic peptide, which is a measurement of the heart's resistance to filling, that it makes this little hormone, and at a hair trigger reaction to get an echocardiogram. We like those EKGs to be faxed to a cardiologist to help and aid in the diagnosis if there's questions that are coming up. Patients, females that is, frequently don't have elevation of the troponin I as males do, but they'll have a positive BNP, and we've learned to identify that. And so that's for the acute patient in the emergency room. to prevent patients from flying under the radar, which we had identified a group of ladies who got admitted to the hospital with variable diagnoses such as dehydration, gastrointestinal symptoms, and so forth, and went to a general medical floor rather than going to the cardiac floor to get telemetry, and were having a heart attack, and were, quote, flying under the radar. So this particular approach will close that gap.
Excellent. When did you, when was this approach initiated, Eric?
This, we've been doing this approach at Memorial Hospital for the last several years now, and we've seen that we have definitely closed the gap. We're going to expand this in other hospitals around the ISIS system. They have 15 acute care hospitals, and we're going to expand this to other hospitals as well.
Excellent, and I'd like to personally congratulate you on this very important work.
Thank you. And then the next thing is risk factors among women to reduce cardiovascular disease. And the risk factors, as we said, they're more common to have diabetes and hypertension, which are pretty well thought of normal risk factors that are known. But there's others we haven't talked about, which is obesity as a risk factor. And then family history is very important. A premature family history. And the reason I see probably more women in my office than any other reason is the premature family history of heart disease in their mother or father or brothers. And they say, is this going to happen to me? I'm 50 years old now. I'm about to reach menopause. And I'm worried this is going to happen to me. And so that brings us on to how you can identify other risk factors in them that need to be measured. And one is the highly sensitive C-reactive protein from the Jupiter study that Steve brought up prior to we getting started here. And that's a blood test that can identify women who are in an upper quintile at risk for having heart disease.
C-reactive protein. And can you quickly define that for the listeners?
C-reactive protein is highly sensitive, HS, C-reactive protein, which is an inflammatory marker that indicates that there is inflammation going on in the arteries of the heart. The C-reactive protein can be elevated in any inflammation, so you have to be inflammation-free. You can't have a urinary tract infection or acute sinusitis or an upper respiratory infection. You got to be in a steady state equilibrium and then have the test measured. And then another test that's becoming more useful is looking for coronary calcification with a CT scan, not looking at the coronaries themselves, but looking at the outside of the coronaries and what's in the wall of the coronaries, which can be measured in terms of coronary calcification. And that frequently identifies people who don't have the traditional Framingham risk factors, but still are at high risk of having obstructive coronary disease and severe disease.
Quick question. Can you have calcification without atherosclerosis?
No. Calcification in the coronaries is atherosclerotically driven 99.9% of the time in our population.
Okay, now, we've got only about a minute left to go. Eric, any last messages for our listeners out there?
Yes, I would like to make the point that women have always been a great mystery to me, and they continue to be a mystery in terms of heart disease. And they were understudied in the past and underappreciated in terms of their risk of having heart disease in the future.
Very good. We want to thank Eric Harrison, and it certainly sounds like there are a lot of new things available. If you have symptoms, you don't feel right, please let your doctor know, get an evaluation. Next week on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, we'll be tackling sports medicine right here. We'll see you next week. Have a great week.